And as the Heidelberg Catechism summarizes it, it's meant to be a day of worship, as it says, and also of rest. Well, first, all that we're able to do in worship. Secondly, to enjoy that eternal rest already in this life. God shows us and gives us rest and worship to go together. And that's really actually also then what makes Sunday or Sabbath such a delight for us. So think about it. God almost offers us the complete getaway package, if you will. And I think it's worthwhile to even just consider in different ways the connection between the two. Because it's very easy for us to maybe stress one or the other depending on the situation. And depending maybe on what is convenient for us. We may be thinking, well, worship actually isn't that restful. And since my Sunday is supposed to be a day of rest, maybe I should find an easier way of worshiping. Go out for a hike, spend it at the beach. It's far more restful to me than sitting at church. Or maybe the other way around. We rather be doing something on Sunday rather than resting. And so we say, well, actually, Sunday is about worship. So if I put my 2 hours in, go to church, then after that, it's free game. I can do whatever I want. And whether you go one way or another, I think you're overlooking at least one important aspect of what God has given us in the fourth commandment. It gives us a day of worship and of rest. That's what we'll look at this afternoon. Sabbath, a day of worship and rest. Rest leads to worship. Worship leads to rest. Rest and worship lead us to God. First connection, from rest to worship. Probably preaching to the choir, but there's a sense in which life is profoundly unrestful. See it in different ways, in different areas of life. And I say that, I know many of you might even be experiencing and enjoying March break at this time. Maybe in the middle of enjoying some rest. But most likely there's a chance that you actually needed it. If it's not you kids who needed it, maybe it's your parents who needed it. School year is busy. Our schedules are busy. And if it's not school that we're busy with, then it's probably work. It's a never-ending cycle. Housework runs too on that never-ending cycle. You do it once and you got to do it again the next day. We do our jobs each day, providing by the sweat of our brow the income we need for another month or another 2 weeks. And whether we work the land or not, there's always some form of thistle, thorns, some kind of way in which the curse is there, in which we need to overcome. There ain't no rest for the wicked. Of course, that just shows one aspect. That's just really the unrestfulness maybe of our physical life. But mentally too, we are often taxed. Physically, we might be exhausted, ready for sleep, ready for some rest. But then your mind fills itself with worries, concern, and sleep, rest doesn't come. And maybe you don't experience it when you try to sleep. Maybe you just experience that during the day. Like, I got to do some work done. I got to get this, write an exam, finish up some work, and you just can't focus. Might have the time, you might have to work right in front of you, but your mind is not there. It's just not restful, at peace enough. Physical and mental life can be exhausting. It's also that way spiritually. We are in what is a constant battle with our enemies, our sinful nature, the world, and the devil. Take just one of them. No fighting your own flesh. It can never be an easy task. It's always going to be difficult and taxing because, guess what? You never escape yourself. On top of that, we maybe struggle to bring to mind God's grace and forgiveness and his promises for us. since our default is always going to be and to think that we need somehow need to earn God's love. We burden ourselves with the help of what the devil suggests to us and what the world says, and our conscience with a sense of failure that probably drains us, may even bring us to despair, because we cannot escape the fact that we are sinners, by nature undeserving of God's love. In all of these different ways, and probably more that you can think of, life can be far from restful. And then we haven't even touched on the fact that in this life, under the curse, there are crises, calamities, illnesses, pain, natural disasters, and whatnot that are often mixed in with our lives. And none of it restful. We get a good picture, really, of this reality when we see God at work in the book of Exodus. Now, Exodus begins with Israel and Egypt, and they're doing okay. They're prosperous. They've increased in number. But you maybe know the story. Then a Pharaoh comes along who hadn't known Joseph, who's going to oppress the Israelites, going to make them slaves. He thinks that by working them hard, by drowning all the baby boys, he will be able to crush the Israelites. He can break them. Under his rule, there is no rest for Israel. They have to work and work, and they start crying out to the Lord, "Help us." As we know the story, then Moses is sent to save the Israelites, to lead them out of Egypt. And the Lord uses the 10 plagues to eventually have them go. But even there, interesting, it's that Moses first goes to Pharaoh and doesn't say, "Just let my people go, let them be free." His first request is just that, may the Israelites have a break. May they go out to the desert and worship the Lord. And Moses asks the Pharaoh, or tells him in Exodus 5 verse 1, "This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says, let my people go so that they may hold a festival to me in the desert." They were busy working for Pharaoh. There was no time to worship or to serve the Lord unless they were giving rest from serving Pharaoh. And God reminds his people of this situation, of what he had done in the fourth commandment, as found in Deuteronomy 5. Maybe no, there's in some ways two different versions of the fourth commandment in Exodus and in Deuteronomy. In Exodus, God connects it to what he had done himself. "Work 6 days, and on the seventh you shall rest." In Deuteronomy 5, he says, "Remember, Israel, that you were slaves in Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to observe the Sabbath day." It slaved away under Pharaoh. But God wasn't like that. God wasn't going to be like that. He said, "I'll set you free. I'll give you a break that you may worship me." And in some ways, we say rest leads to worship. You can think of more, a fuller, deeper concept of rest, whether it's redemption, victory, no more problems from your enemies. All of that come together to lead to worship. In this world where so much can be unrestful, fourth commandment reminds us of what God has done and is doing. Now he steps in to give us rest to worship him. He isn't like Pharaoh. He's no slave driver. His gift to us is redemption, victory, rest, that we may worship him. We start here because it reminds us that the opportunity to worship, to call on God's name, to assemble, isn't something that we should take for granted. And I don't think I think that we have been feeling that over the last couple of months, that yes, we cannot take this for granted. Rest isn't a right. It's not something that we've earned as the result of working 5 days. Rather, any Sunday we enjoy in worship is a gift from God, who promises to also set us free from physical, mental, spiritual weariness. a reminder that anytime we have that sense of relief that, yes, God has brought us out of Egypt, our hearts may automatically say, yes, restfully so, I'm going to worship you. But it also brings up the question, so if life is so profoundly unrestful, where do you find rest? If our first point followed the line from rest to worship, let's now follow the line from worship to rest. We've already touched on the fact that God gave Israel rest by setting them free from Pharaoh. They no longer had to work for Pharaoh, but were now there free to worship the Lord. For them, rest, victory, freedom led to worship. You think, great, that's an amazing story. That's kind of what God wanted. Yes, but even then, it still didn't go smoothly. Before the Israelites even made it into the desert at Mount Sinai, the mountain of the Lord, they had already started complaining about returning to Egypt, claiming that it was probably better to be a slave of Pharaoh and work than being out there in the desert. And it became pretty clear early on in Exodus that Israel's problem wasn't just that they had to serve Pharaoh. It wasn't just the problem that they had to serve Pharaoh and couldn't serve the Lord. It was that they rather not serve the Lord. And that until they served him, they just wouldn't find rest. By their very nature, they were restless. And the choice between the desert and Egypt, they said, let's go back to Egypt. Consider that. Now, as much as life is profoundly unrestful, and there are many aspects in which that happens to us and we can't control it, if we know our hearts and if we know our own lives, we see that we are probably also like the Israelites. We should probably realize and confess that we don't make it any easier on ourselves. Think about it, just as a couple of examples. Sure, God has cursed all labor in a way because the ground will bring forth thorns and thistles. But dealing with thorns and thistles on 100 acres because of greed is much more difficult than 40 acres if you could be content. Mentally, we may be taxed by all the different things that God has put on our plate and that we have to care about. But we're probably also not helping ourselves if we always say yes to things just because we want to look good in the eyes of others. Spiritually, we are burdened by our sin, and we may say, yeah, in my weakness, I sin. There may be other circumstances that contribute to it, but in the end, we always recognize, or should recognize, that we are the ones who sinned, and we are the ones to blame. We are culpable. And if we realize that, we also realize that, yeah, that's not going to help us find rest. Life may be profoundly unrestful on its own, but we certainly don't help with that. We can't find rest in Egypt, sure, because Pharaoh there is working us, which we can just think of how that's our reality, spiritual reality under sin. But we also can't find rest in ourselves. We need to find it outside of ourselves in Jesus Christ. This is why we read the ending of Matthew 11 and beginning of Matthew 12. Because Jesus Christ is always the complete fulfillment of all of God's promises. And we see that again when we consider God's promises of rest. Jesus sees the people around him and they're coming to him and they are burdened, they are yoked, always struggling with these heavy loads of sin and guilt and trying to get rid of it by just doing better, by keeping more commands that the religious leaders had given them. They're looking for rest. And what does Jesus say? He says, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. All those who come to Jesus wouldn't just receive more laws, more things to do. No, all who would come to him would find rest for their souls because Jesus says, you know, my heart, I am in heart, gentle and humble. Were we, even in our trying, just add more unrestfulness to our lives. Jesus promises to take that away and give us a yoke that is easy and a burden that is light following him. That promise of rest just leads right into Jesus revealing himself as the Lord of the Sabbath. He uses the Sabbath to do good, to heal a man with a shriveled hand. Here, the Pharisees were expecting that rest could be given or would come through meticulously keeping the law and making sure that you would never do too much work, never too much exertion on the Sabbath. And they point out Jesus' disciples picking grain. They want to accuse Jesus of healing on the Sabbath. And Jesus says, you know, the Sabbath rules weren't there to give rest, not apart from the Lord of the Sabbath, Jesus Christ. We can discuss and pinpoint all the different ways in which we may be tired today, physically, mentally, spiritually. There can be abundance of reasons to be weary. We have to also then realize that rest isn't just going to be found in a change of circumstances, being set free, or just getting past a certain difficulty in your life. It's also not going to be found in working harder or smarter, following any number of steps to get ahead. Rest is only found in Jesus Christ and sitting at his feet, following him, bringing your burdens to him, to the one who cares for you deeply. He knows life is profoundly unrestful. He knows you, and he knows you don't make it any better by your sin. And still he says, come to me, and I will give you rest. Rest in his finished work. Rest in God's care for you. Rest in the hope of life with him. He's not going to send you away empty-handed if you seek him for rest. Says, I'm the Lord of the Sabbath. My goal, my purpose is to give rest. For my heart is gentle and humble for sinners. Now, the fourth commandment commands us to rest, but not just by doing nothing, but by seeking the Lord of the Sabbath and worshiping at his feet as the people of God. We may be quick to think that we could find something that is more restful than worship for any kind of reason. It's too much effort, it's too uncomfortable, whatever else. I challenge you then, where are you finding rest? And what may that say about whether you're on the road in or out of Egypt? Now, rest leads to worship. Worship leads to rest. And to truly understand the glory of worship and why we might find rest there, I just want to leave you then with a picture of worship and rest as it leads us, in some ways, into God, into his presence. So worship is intended. For that picture we've read from Leviticus 24. It's probably not a familiar passage, or really the kind of furniture in the tabernacle that we would often think about in our daily lives. Well, that's why the passage actually kind of stands out. Here in chapter 23, you get all of these Israelite festivals. This is what their religious year was going to look like. All of the important dates, all of the celebrations and the days off that they may have. That's chapter 23. Chapter 25, the Sabbath principle continues. Not only was the principle the first celebration of every year, you know, a Sabbath and constantly every week. No, every seventh year was an important year. Every seventh cycle on the 50th day year was also a great year of Jubilee. You got all the religious feasts, chapter 23. Got all of the principle of the Sabbaths and the sevens in chapter 25. And sandwiched in between that, you have the passage that we read. Chapter 24. First, the description of the light and the bread in the holy place, and then the story of the blasphemer. That's the other part of the chapter. The one, you have that picture of really Israel's holiness in the presence of God, and the other one, basically the exact opposite of it. So it stands out. There's some significance there. So what's with this bread and oil? Well, in the holy place, God set up this lamp, a menorah with its seven arms to light up the inside of the tabernacle, the inside of the holy place. And from other descriptions, Jesus or God is very particular. He says, make sure that the light is shining forward and that it's shining on the table. On that table, where are you going to put 12 loaves, 2 rows of 6? You're going to put them there every Sabbath. The priests and Aaron, they're going to eat it at the end of the week. But every week, every Sabbath, new loaves were to be placed there. As if they could just bask in the light of the lamp. God even calls that his lasting covenant, a lasting relationship as long as the bread enjoyed the light of the lamp. Now, what we may say is the significance of this. Well, at least one thing I'd like to point out. I think God gives us a picture of how all of Israel, all those 12 tribes represented by those 12 loaves, would gather together on the Sabbath to bask in the light of God's presence through listening to his word in worship. Every Sabbath, they were again refreshed by God as they just really basked in his glory. God gave his people this Sabbath so that they may be sanctified in his presence. Someone has said, now if you want to get a tan, you want to get tanned, you essentially need two things. You need time, basically time in the sun. You need time and the sun. What God teaches the Israelites in the Old Testament, especially in the book of Leviticus, is that if you want to be holy, you need two things. You need time. And you need God's presence. And time in his presence. And that's what God gives his people on the Sabbath and through this fourth commandment. Time, rest, time off in God's presence, in worship. And if we've been paying attention, we'll have noticed that whether it's the catechism, but also the picture of those 12 loaves, just show us how the Sabbath is something we celebrate together. And since in the last couple months, often enough, we've probably more focused on what we can do individually in worship, let's just also think about that for a little bit more as we get to the end this afternoon. Well, the Sabbath is a day of rest and worship. And we may think it's my rest and my worship. And anytime God talks about the Sabbath and worship, it's a communal thing. It's the day on which he shows also in the tabernacle. We gather, we assemble together to bask in God's presence, trusting that wherever God's people gather, there God himself will come. The Sabbath is meant to be enjoyed together with fellow believers. Now, in many different ways, we probably are easy, or we realize that already, especially in the last little while, we realize like if we're not together, it is hard to sing. It's more difficult maybe to pray. We're missing that fellowship, all of it, which we find to be important for worship. Sure, many different things of what we've read in Lord's Day 38, we can continue to do, but we also miss a lot. Not quite as God intended worship to be. It's interesting. I think we all still think of rest as maybe that's maybe God's personal gift to me. And in some ways, that is a wonderful gift, and you can go maybe also this evening, this afternoon, and enjoy a restful day. But rest is also something you do together. When you think about it, I wonder how many of those sitting here or watching, working in a crew, would go enjoy a drink on a Friday afternoon. Work is done. Together, enjoy a sense of accomplishment, and cherishing the beginning of a couple of days of rest. but you might be in the habit of actually enjoying that with those whom you've worked all week. It may be strange to compare drinks on Friday with worship on Sunday. And sure, it is in some ways. It's the amazing thing of Sabbath of Sunday is that we start our week with rest. But doesn't that give a new meaning also to how Jesus actually calls us co-workers in the gospel, in the New Testament? And what is the Lord's Supper about, if not that Jesus invites us to eat and drink, celebrating not our work, but his accomplished work, his finished work? Rest, too, is shared with brothers and sisters, not just in the life to come, but every Sunday, as we rest in what our Lord has done for us. He invites us to worship and rest together in his name. Amen. Let's now sing Psalm 67.